The Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew, the 5th chapter.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Jesus said to the disciples, "You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, 'You shall not murder,' and 'Whoever murders shall be liable to judgment.' But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, 'You fool,' you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him. Or your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown into prison. Truly I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. You have heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go into hell. It was also said, 'Whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce.' But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, 'You shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord.' But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you,
O
Christ.
No, it's good. Greetings from our entire family, our immediate family, I guess I should say, including Marta and our two girls now grown up. They're both young adults, 25 and 21. And we also have a 3.5-year-old grandson named Gabriel back in Costa Rica. They send you their greetings from much warmer latitudes. And also a special greeting from Bishop Melvin Jimenez and the pastors of your companion church, our companion church in Costa Rica, the Costa Rican Lutheran Church. And there's actually been one major development since the last time I visited here, and that is that the church in Costa Rica has 5 new ordained pastors. 2 you might consider transfers from other denominations, and 3 were wholly prepared by the Costa Rican church. And like ELCA, the church in Costa Rica celebrated its 25th anniversary this past year. And the centerpiece of its anniversary worship service was the ordination of these 5 pastors. So special greetings from each one of them as well, and I'll be saying a bit more about one of those pastors later in this message. Today we are gathered here on the 6th Sunday after the Epiphany. And for the 3rd Sunday in a row, if you've been attending worship or if you've been paying attention to the lectionary, our gospel reading comes from Matthew's narration of the Sermon on the Mount. That's a series of teaching which actually spans 3 chapters of Matthew's gospel. We're in chapter 5. It goes all the way to the end of chapter 7. And as you heard from our gospel reading this morning, these are pretty weighty topics, and they continue to be that way through the rest of the sermon. Subjects like murder, anger, adultery, divorce, oaths. And although the text doesn't say it anywhere. You know, you have to wonder what the reaction was by the hearers when they were hearing it. And actually, if you go through the text and you look for a reaction of the people, of the crowds that Jesus, because there were, it says he was preaching to the multitudes on a hill there, you don't really find anything until you get to the very end of chapter 7, where in one verse it says, they were astonished, they were astounded at his teaching. They were astounded. I think some people were probably angry, uncomfortable, upset. There were probably a lot of other adjectives, but that's what Matthew chose to record it. And when I read that, I decided that that's what something that I would like to share with you this morning during this brief time that we'll have during the sermon. Because you remember, I think maybe the astonishment of the people who heard Jesus, that comes from the fact, remember that earlier in this text and others that we've heard during the Epiphany season, it said, this Jesus of Nazareth, and somebody asked, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Sort of such low expectations for what a new prophet might say, which made their astonishment even greater. And I guess, as part of the missionary experience, I've been serving now as a missionary for, Martin and I have been serving from Costa Rica for a little over 11 years now, and before that I was in Guatemala for 10 years. And I have to say that over that time, I've been absolutely astounded more than a few times, not by what I necessarily was doing, but what I have been taught by people in Central America. And when I say taught, I'm not talking about in a classroom setting. I'm talking about by their personal witness. This coherence between what they profess as Christians and how they live out their beliefs, or in a more popular way of saying it, they don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk. And I'd like to just share a couple of examples of that with you this morning. The first one is the case of a man named Maximiliano Aguirre. Maximiliano lives in the eastern part of Honduras. And I met him, the only time that I met him was almost 2 years ago, when I was participating as the ELCA representative in evaluation team for the Lutheran World Federation program in Central America. That is a program that receives support from our World Hunger Appeal offerings. And we went to the community where he lives, and one of the things we were looking at is kind of the impact of a project that was helping peasant farmers like Maximiliano. There was a group of 10, actually, in a community that was significantly larger than that, who had been participating in a project that has to do with adaptation to climate change. And specifically, it has to do with kind of learning how to extend the growing season and actually grow during the dry season, which is something that is not part of traditional agricultural practices in Central America for centuries. So we had an opportunity to first talk to people in the village, and then we walked, I don't know, maybe a couple kilometers to where his parcel was, his plot of land. And fortunately, he has a plot of land that's right next to a little creek or a stream, which meant that even in the month of, this was the month of end of February, which is you're in the middle of dry season then, so normally you can't grow anything anywhere in Central America at that time of the year. But since he was next to a little stream or creek, there was a source of water for a simple irrigation system. So we walked there, and all of a sudden we come upon his parcel, this green, lush place. I mean, he had everything growing. He was not only learning about irrigation, he was learning about what crops would work better during that time of year, because during the rainy season, they grow other staple crops. And he was proudly showing us all this, and it really was like a green oasis in the midst of kind of the brown and the dust and the heat that usually characterizes that part of Honduras at that time of year. So We were talking, and at one point in the conversation, I said to him, well, like, what are you going to do with the harvest from this? Because, you know, you're going to have a harvest at a different time of year. I said, I mean, are you growing enough here to actually sell some of it? Because that's what a lot of agricultural products are for, projects are for. You know, you want to guarantee the people's own consumption for their families, but ability to sell some of that at market. And when I asked that question, he turned to me and said, oh, no, no. He said, I couldn't possibly sell this stuff because, you know, there's only about 10 of us in this project in this community. So what I do is, from some of the new growth here, I'm sort of sharing the seedlings with my neighbors. And he says, instead of selling it, because we are all in need in this community, whatever excess we have that we can't ease the family, we give to the rest of the community. We couldn't possibly think of selling it. And when I heard that, I thought to myself later when we were reflecting on that visit, there's a lot of things that you're supposed to teach in a project like that, a lot of technical expertise, but you can't teach a Christian ethic like that. That was one of the most truest examples of Christian solidarity, I think, that I've ever run into. And left me astounded by that example of sharing and love for one's neighbor. Let me introduce you to another of a dear colleague of mine in El Salvador. Her name is Vilma Rodriguez. Vilma is a parish pastor of the Lutheran Church in El Salvador with an incredible passion for the formation of church leaders. She directs a year-round program of leadership training for all the pastoral leaders of the Salvadoran Church, ordained and unordained alike. That church has approximately 50 active ordained pastors, but the number of lay leaders who are performing pastoral duties is about three times that many. So altogether, she's working with something like 200 people. Her ministry takes her to the four corners of El Salvador each month. El Salvador is not a very big country. It's about the size of the state of Massachusetts, so you can do that. And in concrete terms, what that means is that if you visit the Salvadoran church on any given Tuesday, you will find Vilma leading classes in Bible or preaching or Lutheran theology or church history or evangelism in one of the church's micro-regions. Here we divide our synods into conferences. There, that national church is divided into what they call micro-regions. So from on the west-hand side of the country, Carasucia, Santa Ana, to the Pampitas in San Salvador in the middle of the country, to San Jorge and San Miguel in the east, Vilma's hard at work. And whenever I visit El Salvador, Vilma always invites me to come and see the growth and development and maturity that is taking place in the congregational leaders that are going through the training program. It's a continuing education program that you never graduate from. You always go. And through them, new life and growth is taking place in the congregations where these people serve, particularly the lay leaders. And Vilma always says to me as well, she says, now, when you come, I don't want you to just come and observe. I want you to be a part of the process. I want you to teach. And Vilma, being a very persuasive person, I basically teach and work with her. But I have to say, it's no imposition. To the contrary, I relish every opportunity I have to work alongside her and to work with her, the lay leaders of the church that are being trained, because Vilma is a passionate advocate for the full participation of lay leaders in the life of the church. In truth, she is helping the Salvadoran church bring the concept of the universal priesthood of all believers to life. Now, that's something that's been long a part of our Lutheran doctrinal teachings. Most of us heard something about that when we went through confirmation. But it's often been absent from our actual church practices. But I would say thanks to Vilma and thanks to the leaders and their commitment and their willingness to step forward, that is not the case in the Salvadoran church. The third example that I would like to share with you is example of one of those five Costa Rican pastors that I mentioned at the beginning, recently ordained. Actually, she's not Costa Rican. She, like our family, were immigrants, and she is too. She's Nicaraguan by birth. Her name is Geraldine Alvarez. And she was the first woman ordained by the Costa Rican Lutheran Church. It's not the first woman pastor who has served in that church, because foreign missionary pastors, we've had one from ELCA, there's been one from the Church of Sweden, who have also served with that church. But this is the first time that the Costa Rican church itself has ordained a woman pastor. And Geraldina's history is very interesting because she was not born Lutheran. And I think she'd had pretty limited contact with the Lutheran church until she actually moved to Costa Rica with her mother. Her mother is a professor at the Latin American Biblical University in San Jose. And so the two of them moved from Nicaragua to Costa Rica back in 2005. And at that time, Geraldina really did not have a particular sense of a vocational calling to serve as a pastor or to serve in any other capacity in the church because of her experiences with a different church. They were members of the Nazarene Church in Nicaragua. But what changed her, what touched kind of a deep chord inside of her, was when she came into contact with the Lutheran community in a place called La Carpio. Martha's not with me this morning, otherwise she could tell you a lot more about that place, but La Carpio is this big, sprawling community on the western edge of San Jose. Tens of thousands of people live there, but you will never find it on a map. You can look through all the tourist books all you want because most of the people who live there are Nicaraguan immigrants, most of them undocumented. And the Lutheran Church has been present in that community for a long time. And when, for some reason, shortly after Geraldina and her mother, Violeta, arrived in Costa Rica, they decided they were looking for connections to their Nicaraguan roots. So they attended the Lutheran Church there, and that awoke in Geraldina something that she had not sensed before, this calling maybe to prepare for pastoral ministry. And I think the part of that that really awoken that desire or that sense of calling in her was the fact that, unlike her own church, she found in the Lutheran Church a church that was open to everyone in the community, regardless of their nationality or immigration status. It was a welcoming church, and that was she found there something that was much more consistent with the way she understood the gospel than what she had found in her own denominational upbringing. So, after 4 years of theological studies and then 3 years of pastoral experience, she was ordained this past September. And you would think, well, in our context, we would think that's not all that significant event. But you have to realize that in Costa Rica, to ordain a woman, and then a woman who is Nicaraguan, that is a very unusual event. The first part of it, her gender has to do with it. Now, we've been ordaining women in the Lutheran Church since 1970, if I'm not mistaken. So that's not all that unusual, but you have to remember that Costa Rica is still a country that's strongly dominated by the Roman Catholic Church and is actually one of the few countries left in Latin America where Catholicism is the religion of the state, officially the state. So that's the first part of it. But the second part of it is that, she's not just a woman, but she's a Nicaraguan. She's not even Costa Rican. She's Nicaraguan. Now, what does that have to do with it? What that means is that, as I mentioned before, the Costa Rica's situation vis-a-vis Nicaragua is very similar to our situation in the United States vis-a-vis immigration from Mexico, Central America, the Andean region of South America. And what that means is that in this country, in Costa Rica, you find varying attitudes about the presence of so many Nicaraguan immigrants there, some of which is discriminatory, racist, and xenophobic. And so, for a church first to ordain a woman, and to ordain a woman who is Nicaraguan by birth, turns out to be nothing short a truly astounding event, discomforting event. But I think the interesting thing about it is that now Geraldina, her sense of calling isn't to being ordained to be able to put on the stole now. It's a sense of calling to what she's going to do now with her ministry. And I think what you're going to find is that that church is going to have a very strong advocate within the congregations that she served, but with the national church as a whole, a very strong advocate for gender equity, I would say, in both the church and also in society. Now, whether you realize it or not, you have been global mission partners with people like Maximiliano, Vilma, and Geraldina. In the case of Maximiliano, it's been through your offerings to the ELCA World Hunger Appeal, some of which go to support the LWF program in Central America, which includes Honduras. And in the case of Vilma and Geraldina, it's through that portion of your offerings, which is shared with the New Jersey Synod and the larger church through what we now call ELCA Mission Support. But that's really not why I've shared their stories with you. It goes far beyond introducing you to some real live individuals at the other end of your offerings. In different ways, these three people also teach us something very important about what global mission is about now in the 21st century. Yes, it includes sending missionaries or receiving special offerings with a global mission focus, but it's far more than that. Those things have to do with the way that we share our gifts with people in other parts of the global community. But global mission today also means and includes receiving the gifts of our global mission companions. Gifted people with a very powerful personal witness of faith, such as Maximiliano, Vilma, and Geraldina. People who teach us about true love for our neighbor, about our common call to mission through baptism, the universal priesthood, and about a sense of vocational calling in adverse contexts. In truth, today, the questions, the way we relate to each other as part of a global communion now, changes the sort of questions maybe that we ask about global mission. We tend, in the U.S. context, we tend to have a very individualistic focus, where we say, and I get this question, what is your mission? What is my mission? And I think that's the wrong question. The question is, what is God's mission in whatever context that we find ourselves? And then whoever's there, wherever you're from, whether in the case of, I'm from the U.S. and I'm serving in Costa Rica. Marta is Guatemalan and serving in Costa Rica. Geraldina is Nicaraguan and serving with the church in Costa Rica alongside of Costa Ricans. It really lifts up, and I would take us back to our second reading, the end of that, where it says, the one who plants and the one who waters have a common purpose, for we are God's servants working together. God's servants who have a sense of calling, each of us with our own gifts and talents, and each of us putting those gifts and talents at the service of the church and of the larger community wherever we find ourselves. Amen.
Invite you to join in singing hymn 583.